My name is Bruce Kushnick, and I'm going to talk about the $500 billion broadband scandal. It's time to break up AT&T again. For those of you who don't know, I've been a telecom analyst for 36 years. I work with a group called the Irregulators at this point, which are former senior staff members of the FCC, the Attorney General's offices, consumer advocates, and our goal is to actually fix what's broken instead of keep talking about it. I've been doing this for a very long time, and $500 billion broadband scandal is sort of an update of the last book I wrote, but I'm going to basically make you ask people to pick one or the other. If you take the blue pill, I think you'll wake up tomorrow and not remember my name, which is probably a good thing. Take the red pill, you'll go, what the hell was he talking about? Okay. I'm going to be talking about the history of broadband in America, which most of you probably may know pieces of, but I kind of doubt most of you know the whole truth. And I'd like to announce, there was a settlement last week, of Verizon New York. We had been working on this for 7 years, actually 9 years total. And what happened was Verizon New York has decided to settle in a case where they're putting in 32,000 lines of fiber optics in unserved areas. And they're supposed to fix the copper that's been broken in areas that are not going to be upgraded to fiber. And we estimated this to be about a $300 million to $500 million settlement. things take a little time. Thank you very much. However, I'm about to talk about another $500 billion we've just found, which brings the total up to a ridiculous amount of more than $1 trillion. And if you think I'm not going to give you some of the facts and some of the data points that you can check yourself, I've written a couple of books on this. We believe that AT&T, Verizon, CenturyLink, and the FCC intentionally made the local phone networks unprofitable, the state utilities, starting in around 2005. And in fact, as I will discuss, it's a lot of money. We are currently in an appeal of one of the FCC decisions, something about backhaul, which I'll be glad to talk about separately, but our plan is to sue the FCC, create a model complaint that everybody in this room and everybody in America can file, which basically is going to say, I'll go into in a little detail, and we're going to call for the taking back of the networks. We paid for them. They should be more ours than they're not. For those of you who don't know, and we're going to call for the breakup of AT&T one more time. Now, I should give you some of my credentials. I started off in 1972. I was at a dorm at MIT, and we were building these boxes that would basically let you make unlimited long-distance calls right around the world for free by taking the box, taking a tone 2600, disconnecting the long-distance operator, and then going wherever you wanted to. Now, it turns out that the dorm that I was in was called Bexley. In the basement of Bexley, there happened to be a unique feature, which was all the phone lines in the entire institute were in the basement of Bexley. So some of the dorm rooms had 9, 12 phone lines. However, in 1972, we were warned that the FBI was coming to the dorm, and there was a banner, which I don't have a picture of, which said, "Welcome the FBI." And that's one of the FBI agents. I decided to redact his face. This is taken in 1972. They actually used pencils and paper, and they were like, "Well, how did you rack up a million? Never mind. I don't go into details. We were working with some guys in California that started a company called Apple. Specifically, Wozniak was a friend of one of the guys in the dorm. So basically, when I became a telecom analyst, they said, "Well, how did you start?" And I said, "Well, I was very interested in the technology, of course." So, before 1980, this is Ma Bell. Ma Bell was the entire country's telecommunications infrastructure. They also on long distance. You even had to buy the phone. You rent the phone from them. And so, essentially, it was one large corporation. There was 1 million customers. I'm not good at this thing at all. Sorry. One more time back. that's my book, The Book of Broken Promises. It's free, it's a download, it's online at theirregulators.org. I don't know why I missed that thing, glad I went back. Anyway, there we go. The Bell system was basically a collection of state utilities, which most people don't know. And so there's Verizon, there was a New York Telephone, there was Pacific Bell out in California, And so each of these separate entities were actually in charge of the entire infrastructure. However, AT&T, the parent, was basically in charge of the oversight of all these companies. Now, what's problematic is, I should give you a little history. So MCI, which was wanted to go into the long distance business and a bunch of other players, so they sued the AT&T and they had something called a divestiture where they created seven baby Bells. Now these are the fattest babies in history. There was US West, there was Pac Bell. So all of these people wanted to be Ma Bell again. And that's why, I'll get to how this all happened. But essentially what happened was is all of these companies were basically supposedly supposed to compete with each other. They were supposed to go out and also wire America with a fiber optic line that was capable of 45 megabits in both directions in the year 1992. Okay, so here's what's going on. 1991, there's a Clinton-Gore campaign that's talking about the information superhighway. This was basically a plan to just replace the existing copper wire with a fiber optic wire that basically would go to everybody's home, everybody's office by the year 2010. And the speed of broadband, as listed in state report, proceedings, including there was a guy named Harry Newton who had Telecom Library, and he published Telecom Dictionary, and this was the speed of broadband in the United States in 1992. Now there was a couple of problems with this. Since 45 megabits in both directions, the hard drives were only 40 megs. So there was a little disconnect between all this. And the information superhighway, which is I should talk about, basically was everywhere. So if you were to go read a newspaper, magazine, listen online, this is worse than 5G, is wireless hype. This is sort of like America is going to have, you know, fiber optics coming soon to your TV starting in 1996. Now what most people don't know, so this is Pacific Bell's rollout of fiber optics for California. By the year 2000, there were supposed to be 5.5 million lines. They were supposed to spend $16 billion. And by 1997, they hadn't rolled out the squat. And in fact, they pocketed the money. Now, what you should know is that in every state, the phone companies went to the state and said, you know, if only you change the laws, we would be glad to go out and spend the extra money on the infrastructure. And they gave them price caps, which basically said, make as much as profits as you want, don't worry about it, and use that money for the infrastructure. Not one state in the last 20 years has ever gone back and said, excuse me, where's the fiber optic lines that you were supposed to put in? Did you refund the $15 billion you collected for doing this over this period of time? This has never happened. So, next one. Now, for those of you who think that I'm kidding, this is a list of the 22 filings at the FCC in 1993 and 4 by all the companies who basically said, well, let's see. It's kind of hard to read. It's in my book, by the way. Connecticut was supposed to have 1 million lines put in permanent, which was AT&T owned it. There was supposed to be Cleveland, Indianapolis, Ohio, most of the East Coast. There was 1.2 million lines in supposed to be up the East Coast and 1 million lines in District of Columbia. So and what happened was this is a very interesting thing. These models were all fraudulent. Now, I'm sitting there. Let me see if the next slide is what I think it might be. No. Okay, so I'll go back. I don't know how to go back. So. I'm sitting there, and basically what happened was is I'm a consultant at this point to working for an agreement with International Data Corp. In 1992, I helped roll out the first three-digit dialing service, independent dialing service, 511 with Cox Newspapers. I was basically making a lot of money. I was traveling around the world, and I was talking about things like the information superhighway until I realized that there were holes. The previous slide basically showed that they claimed it was going to cost $750 to $1,000 to put in a fiber optic line and that the set-top box would be $250. This is 1992. I don't think it was capable of doing that. You know, we couldn't do it for $10,000 in the year 2000, counting the box. The box had to handle 45 megabits in both directions, video. And sorry, that made me laugh. So the other thing that happened At the breakup, they made a couple of mistakes. The first mistake was they overcharged my Aunt Ethel $1,000 for this rotary phone. So I'm sitting there for AT&T and Verizon and all these companies. And essentially, I don't look at the bills usually, and I go to my Aunt Ethel's house, and she has a rotary phone. And her caretaker is saying, you know, she's, my Aunt Ethel's 89 years old, legally blind, with walkers. And she's I go to look at the phone, and I said, give me the bills. She gives me the bills, and this is incredible. I type them into a spreadsheet, find out that she paid over $1,000 for a rotary phone from 1982 to like 1995. And I was like, this is unbelievable to me. This is crazy. There was a case, by the way, about this, which I think there was like a $100 million settlement, which we did not take. Anyway, this thing triggered something where I realized my clients may not be telling me the truth about everything. And so I decided that it was time for a second divestiture, divestiture two. The first divestiture broke up AT&T, but it didn't open up the local phone networks for competition. And I was called a phone bill fanatic by the Washington Times. I was very proud of that. And basically all of my former clients called all of the press and said, I wouldn't talk to this guy anymore. He's no longer reliable. He's gone off the deep end, which is probably true. Now, I did write a report to warn people that things were not going to happen the way they thought, called The Information Superhighway Get a Grip, where they were doing projections. Tomorrow, there will be 48 million phone lines that will be fiber optic by the year 2000. I guarantee it. And if you wait three more days, we'll throw in the TV set. Now, 1996, three things happened. So let me just backtrack for a second. So I was a consultant for International Data Corp in 1986, where I was talking about all the wondrous new interactive services. Oh, by the way, I did help roll out a caller ID. I wrote a report called Automatic Number Identification. Ooh, hot topic. In 1987, which basically was that you could actually productize the phone number that was used in the networks as something that could be a resident service. Turned into caller ID. Thank you very much. I also asked for blocking, please. We did a survey that said 68% of the population did not want to give their phone number out, but 68% of the population wanted to see the number. They weren't quite the same people, but it didn't matter. So in 1992, I realized that something's really wrong. So I create new networks. We start doing a big study on the breakup. We also started tracking all of the broadband commitments. So in 1996, three things happened. Just to bring it up to speed, 1996, the Telecommunications Act of 1996 happens. It says that the wires that are there have to be opened to direct competition on all levels. Internet service providing broadband, phone service, data services, it didn't matter. Two, the phone companies decided to go out and marry each other. And we know this is an act against God when siblings marry. Mm. Yes, and nature. And the internet hits. Now, you have to understand, you know, for us old guys, the internet was basically like a creaky old thing that you had to have somebody help you. That's a modem, okay. That's a dial-up. What do I have to do? I have to call these 15 numbers. I got to see if it works. Okay. It wasn't an easy, and the graphic interface was basically a shaky thing. You would put it up, and it says, that doesn't look anything like this at all, ever. So, the mergers. AT&T was basically created by SBC, which was one of the Bell companies, and it married Pac Bell, which was California, and then it married Southern New England Telephone, which is Connecticut, then it married Ameritech, which was the five states, Ohio, Indiana, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Illinois. Ooh. Thank you very much. And Bell South, which was the last merger. And then it took over AT&T, and I'll explain that for a second. And Verizon was formed by the merger of Bell Atlantic, which was the bottom part of the East Coast, from Virginia to New Jersey, and Ninex, which was from New York up through Maine. And it took GTE, which was all these little places all over the country, and it also took MCI. U.S. West, which is Montana, Washington State, was basically a thing called turned into Quest, and then now is CenturyLink. So what you have is three companies that were formed out of all these other companies. And it wasn't really a good thing because they controlled the wires and the state utilities. Now, SBC, I love this merger. SBC is the five states in Ohio, and SBC is now Pac Bell, Connecticut, and Texas, Oklahoma, a bunch of states in the, and we'll go through them all. And then Meritech was the Ohio, Indiana, okay? So they decided to merge, and they're going to be in 30 cities out of their region in 30 months. Okay, they're going to compete. And so, and this was supposed to make everybody excited because they were going to go out and have direct competition for the other Bell companies. Well, it turns out that the FCC, in one of these clauses we found, basically said you can basically just say that you've done that city if you have three unaffiliated customers in that city. And I'm sitting there going, I can get more in a bar. It's offering free beer to sign up for phone service for three customers. That's all they got in certain cities. So after they filed with the FCC, claiming we fulfilled our obligations. We have 30 cities and maybe a couple hundred people. But they were supposed to have, here it says, we're supposed to have 10 million customers and they never got maybe, a squat number. So that merger basically was just a made up thing. The Telecom Act, when it opened up the networks, also created internet service providers. Most people don't know this, but in the year 2001, there were 9,335 internet service providers offering the majority of customers in the United States, the majority of subscribers, internet service and broadband service. It was not the big telcos offering the service. It was the small guys. In fact, in New York City, there were 331 ISPs advertising in just New York City. Instead, now we have, as you know, a couple of internet service providers and everybody else going, what do we do? Now, Mike Powell closed the networks. So the FCC is taken over by the Republicans in 2001. And Mike Powell, who's the chairman, basically says, we don't want to have any of these pesky competitors around. Why don't we just close the networks? And what we'll do is, how do we close it? We're basically going to say that since AT&T, which was SBC at the time, said we are going to have fiber to the home in 2004. Fiber to the home, 2004. Now, SBC is AT&T. Okay, just keep this in mind. SBC never rolled out fiber to the home in 2004. It rolled out U-verse. So the networks were closed based on this premise that was a lie. So the ISPs had a big run-up, and then basically 7,000 ISPs were basically gotten rid of by these caveats, which had nothing to do whatsoever with the quality of the service or market power. This was the FCC deciding that we don't need competition anymore. And it worked. They put all these ISPs out of business. So there were 7,000 ISPs that were killed off. Now, the way they killed them off was they made the broadband network and the internet network one thing, which turned into net neutrality. So when people say, how does net neutrality formed? Net neutrality was not formed by here and there. This was, we killed off all the competitors, and we decided that the way to do this was we would make the broadband and internet service and information service Title I, and get rid of Title II. And the reason that this was important was because Title II allowed the internet providers to use the networks. It was common carriage. Title I is an information service; they didn't have to rent it out. This killed off line sharing, by the way, where a company could go out and use the wires. And it basically shut down MCI and AT&T as the largest competitors, because those guys couldn't rent the networks easily anymore, and they were the two largest competitors, so they were put out of business. They were taken over. So Humpty Dumpty was basically put back together again. So you had three companies now that control both the infrastructure of the telecommunications side, which are the state utilities. They control the wireless companies because they control the infrastructure of the state utilities. Most people don't know that wireless requires a wire. And in fact, the punchline is basically this FCC is trying to get rid of all the remaining regulations that are left. And I'll go over that in a second. Now, I was on the FCC Consumer Advisory Committee at this point in 2003. I was trying to defend the faith. I was working with one of the guys who was a phone bill auditor. We would go out and we took a bunch of class actions about phone bill overcharging, three of which we settled. and won, thank God. Anyway, what happened was is I'm on the FCC Consumer Advisory Committee, and we're going to talk about truth in billing, and we have one of the experts who does truth in billing, and we've just collected all these bills in New York and New Jersey, and the committee says, it's a great idea, but we're not going to have you speak. I went, what do you mean you're not going to have me speak? Well, no, we're going to have these other people speak, which was the Wireless Association spoke. Gosh, that made me very happy. There was the Phone Company Association spoke, and one of the advocates spoke, except for they didn't really address the stuff that we had put on the table. So I decided to find out who all these people in the room were and realized that the majority of the people in the room, Verizon was on the committee. They'd been on the committee since it started. It had all of these other groups like the Wireless Association, but it had all these AstroTurf groups. These were fake consumer groups that were located in D.C. coming out of a lobbying firm that basically had said, no, we do long distance, we do Hispanic, and we do poor people, and all the different ethnic groups, they decided to have different committees. And so I decided to out them, which was, we got the Washington Post to write a story, and I was not asked back on the committee. The most recent committee that happened, the same kind of story, is current, which is there's a thing called BDAC, which is the broadband, whatever it is. And it's a bunch of things that are trying to get rid of the rights of the states to be able to deal with their own infrastructure and get rid of the cities and basically make the FCC control everything. And one of the guys, a mayor from San Jose, said, you guys are just giving away the store here. And he left the committee. So this is not... This was 2003. This is a little later. So I don't want to think that I'm just picking on the phone companies. The cable companies also did some things that you should know about. They said also, we are going to give broadband to America if you just let us raise our rates and add up to $5 a month so that we can go out and build this new infrastructure. And basically they said, okay, that sounds great, but it expires in 2001. Well, it turns out this old contract never got taken off, the extra $5. It's still built into the rates. And they just kept adding more money to the same things without ever looking at how much profits the listed companies were making anymore. I will also have to note that basically in the agreement, Comcast will also provide a modem and modern modem service to all such schools within a year. That didn't happen either. So the FCC really doesn't do a lot of oversight. And also, by the way, Time Warner, I did some analysis of their revenues and expenses. The broadband service has a 97% profit margin. Because, as I'll explain what happened with local phone service, they decided to dump all the expenses into the basic rate of the utility, or in this case, the cable service, and then all the other services get a free ride. Now, I have to come back once before I leave the mergers. AT&T was always one of my favorite mergers. This one was Bell South. AT&T in 2006, when they filed this, they said, in 2007, we will have 100% coverage of broadband in the United States in our 22 states. Here's the language. And then we find out it's a slow broadband. The FCC's broadband speed, believe it or not, was 200K in one direction in this year. So they said, well, we'll do 200K. However, they never, as we know later, we filed a case against AT&T, they never actually rolled out the broadband in any place because this would require them to do at least DSL. And they didn't want to go out and do a DSL, so they basically just let all these unserved areas become unserved. Gee, I wonder how that happened. Okay, so part two of the broadband scandal, which a lot of people don't know, is that Verizon and AT&T, after they close the networks, after they get rid of all the competitors, say, we're going to roll out broadband, really. We're rolling out fiber optic broadband. And Verizon actually did roll out Fios, which was a fiber optic broadband service, except for the fact that it is Title II, it is common carriage, and it is paid for by local phone customers and dumped into the local rates. Now you could say, what? So the Fios fiber optic wire basically was, and I read, this is from New York State, it's basically part of the state utility. and that it's just an upgrade of the existing wires, and therefore, and it's Title II, which is very important, because Verizon keeps telling the FCC that the broadband stuff and the internet stuff are Title I, and that Title II harms their investment. This is the investment. And I'll get to that in a second. Now, the Public Service Commission in New York says, quote, we're going to give rate increases for the massive deployment of fiber optics. This is 2009. They gave 3 rate increases. They raised rates 84% in New York, with basically because they needed the money. I mean, they're going to build out this massive deployment of fiber optics. 2010, Verizon stops rolling out fiber optics. Now, what's going on, and this is the larger of the scandals, which we only kept finding more and more crap about in the last year. So Verizon is the state utility. The state utility basically is, as I just pointed out, has the fiber optic wires as part of the state utility, even though everybody thinks it's just the copper wires. It isn't. It's paid for by the phone customers. There's the proof of that. And in New York, basically, we made them understand that they were paying for the fiber optic wires, and that basically this was kind of crazy because, and being Title II, but nobody really cared about the part that's called the cross-subsidies part, which is what we found. So what's going on is Verizon was able to take the expenses and dump them into the state utility, making the local wires look unprofitable, while at the same time making all the other services that they have be very profitable. And they did this. By the way, and I just want to make sure that you know that Verizon is charging local phone customers for the wires to the cell sites. In fact, we have Fran Shammo saying, the fact of the matter is wireline capital, and I don't want to get the numbers, but they're pretty substantial, is being spent on the wireline side of the house to support the wireless growth. So the IP backbone, the data transmission, the wires to the cell, this is all in the wireline books. Now, what this means is that basically, grandma, the people who didn't get fiber optic services upstate New York or anywhere else, basically were charged for the wires to the cell sites. We don't think this is legal, by the way. Okay, and everybody is going wireless. We do know this, okay? But the thing that's bothering when people talk about the wireless, first, 5G is just, another hype like the information superhighway. 5G is essentially, I have to say, it goes a block or two at this point. It basically, and it requires a fiber optic wire. So nobody in the rural areas is going to be wiring for 5G. Also, the bottom line is that almost all the regular cell service goes out back to the fiber optic wire. And the companies know this. So the wireless service doesn't pay for the construction, and it's not paying for the access fees. It's basically 55% profits. While local service loses money, dramatically loses money. Now, the FCC, by the way, and the states are all playing with the numbers. When you say to me, well, how many lines are there? I will say, in New York, if you look at the 79th Street, all of these wires, almost half of them are not counted as wires on access lines. Half of them are not being, we're losing all these lines. Well, you're not counting most of the lines that you are gaining from all these other services like the wires to the cell sites or the fiber optic wires. So this way of playing with the numbers is a standard operating procedure at the FCC as well. Now, Verizon just settled, and we asked for was basically to say, you shouldn't be cross-subsidizing these other businesses. This is not necessarily legal. And not only that, but if you cross-subsidize them, you should. So let me see if I have that. Yes. Okay. So what we did find, which is zombie rules. This is about as crazy as it possibly could get. In the year 2000, the FCC sets how the expenses will be allocated to the different lines of business. The year 2000 never changed for 18 years and is frozen. That's it. So in New York, Verizon New York, the state utility lost $2.6 billion in 2017. Just so you know, May 31st, 2017, Verizon 2017, New York 2017 annual report came out. And people like me, this is sort of like Nirvana. Oh, we have real numbers. And what we found was Verizon not only lost $2.6 billion, but local service lost $2.9 billion. This is just the local services, about $1 billion of revenue out of $5 billion of Verizon New York, and local service basically are the regular phone lines. Now, how does the phone lines lose $2.9 billion? Well, the way they did it was local service had $1.8 billion of corporate operations expense dumped into the state utility. The executive jets, the executive pay, the foundation grant money, the lawyers, the lobbyists, it's thrown into local service category for calculations. Local service is then unprofitable. Automatically, local service also paid $1.2 billion in 2017 for construction. This is the copper wires we're talking about. Verizon spent about $125 million on those wires. So what we found was all of these things. Now, how did they get $1.8 billion? How did they get $1.2 billion? And how do they charge all local service? It's very straightforward. By in 2000, Verizon local service has 65% of revenues, paid 65% of the expenses. In 2017, local service pays had 21% of the revenues and paying 60% of the expenses. It didn't change. The expenses basically stayed flat all these years. This way of getting the local networks to be unprofitable was all on paper. I hate to tell you this. The digital divide was created this way. Because they said, it's expensive to do the other areas. Well, in a utility, we in New York State and the urban areas are paying more so that the rural areas get wired. And we're also paying for the wires. It wasn't like they're taking it out of their own budgets. So the zombie rules are, the rules in 2000, the rules that I'm talking about, which are cost accounting rules, were put in 2000. Then in 2007, they decided to erase the FCC decided to erase the tracks. Get rid of anybody that could follow it by getting rid of, they used to publish since 1939, all of the information about each state utility, how much money it was making, the expenses and everything else. In 2007, they erased the entire collection of all data. In 2007, they all filed at the FCC to get rid of all the accounting rules so that nobody could track this anymore. Brendan Carr, who's the current commissioner at the FCC, was Verizon's attorney in 2007 when they filed to get rid of the accounting rules. Sorry, that one cracks me up. So essentially what you have, and then in 2017, the first thing the FCC decided to do was to do weed whacking and get rid of the accounting rules. And I always wondered why. Well, because it turns out that in order to get rid of all of the rules, there are things that are still left hanging that basically hold them hostage, of course, for the public, and they're getting erased those. New York State is the only state we know of that actually publishes all of the financials. So here's what we're suggesting. We just got back, we're going after the companies because there's nothing left to do. We want them to basically we're going after all the money. We believe there's enough money to get America wired with fiber. We believe that it's been basically allowed to be the construction budgets diverted into these other buckets. We believe that the state utilities have basically been used as a cash machine, and we believe that everybody's rates here are up 30 to 50% more than they should be. Let me give you the basic example. Local service is now $57 about that Verizon collects per month on just the wired copper service. It should cost $4. So, or 10, 12, the wireless services that we use are based on the fact that they all go back to the wires, and the wires are controlled by these companies. The wires that go to the cell sites have a 50, 65% profit margin. Why? Because they get away with it. So what we're doing is we're saying we're done. It's time to go after them. And we've been calling for the audits of the subsidiaries, getting rid of them. But our goal now is the FCC's out to screw us, literally and figuratively. So if you look at what the FCC has done, what it does is think of us as just like a large hog on a spit, and they're just cutting all this stuff away. They're basically, all of our rights are being taken away slowly because of the fact that they could allow the companies to control the wire, to control the services over the wire, including, that's why net neutrality wasn't important, to control the privacy. When you sign up for a service, they get to now, if it's not basically a regular phone service, they get to take the data that you have and say, oh, we're going to use it. This is not common carriage. Common carriage is keep your fucking hands off my data. You know, we have the right, it's our, you're just supposed to be a pipe. You're not supposed to go out and say, oh, would you like to buy this spangle or, you know, and anything else. This is not your job. Your job is to give us the best broadband at the cheapest price and make sure that it's fast. Now, because of the fact that they just left most of America hanging, what happened was by 2010, they just said, we're done. We're not going to bother with any more upgrades or anything. Upstate New York, basically, the reason why there was the settlement was because the CWA, the union guys, testified saying, well, the wire was put in the 70s was never, or 60s and was never changed. So you have people with 40, 50-year-old wires that basically are rotting, and they didn't do anything for 40 or 50 years. The budgets were never there. So our take now is that the FCC's plan, just so you know, is to erase all of the accounting rules, to erase privacy, they got rid of net neutrality, to go out and basically allow them to shut off the copper, to preempt the state laws, preempt the city laws, pretty much do whatever they want. And you have to understand, from my perspective, 5G is just a shiny bauble, which is basically being used, oh, the new technology, we're definitely going to do that, just erase all the laws. Sure, we'll definitely do that. I mean, no offense, but deja vu, you know. I've worked on these books for years. This is exactly what's going on. So our take is we have to stop the FCC. We can't let this go on. If the FCC erases the rest of the rules, it'll be very hard to go back to the last layer. Now, most people don't know this is a state utility. We, you know, Verizon New York is a state utility. And we just, and they'll tell you it's a state utility. We have to make sure that people know that, it's, and they offer broadband. The only thing is we can't use the state utility as we thought we should because basically it's been handed over to these guys. So we believe that what should happen next is we should separate the companies from the wires. We've talked about this. I've talked about this since 1992. In fact, I was wearing a suit, and I thought people were going to throw tomatoes at me. You know, no, Doc. Especially my former clients. So I think what we have to do now is we really have to think through the harms that we have, and what are the other solutions. But there aren't that many other solutions. Unless we separate the wireless company from the wireline company, the wires are going to be handed over to this company as private property. That's not a good thing. So, and also all of these mergers with them controlling content, why? What does it have to do with the offering of great service to us in each state? Now, these are state-based utilities. Just keep this in mind. So we have the right to we should have the right to use these state-based utilities because we're basically paid for them over and over and over. I mean, the $500 billion was tracked starting in 1995 or six. And where I started realizing that all the state laws are being changed. And so it really is over $500 billion that collected. This new scandal where we figured out that they were being able to cross-subsidize all their other lines of business and that essentially they decided to intentionally make local service look unprofitable so that they wouldn't have to go out and do the wiring and use it as excuses, I think we can nail them on it. So my job now is to say, anybody who wants to join us, we're looking for people to help. We're going to be raising money to sue that shit out of the FCC. Sorry, pardon my French. And we're going to try to separate, get all the affiliates to start paying market prices, which means that Verizon Wireless has to pay at the same price as everybody else. Now, it's not legal for Verizon to charge their own affiliate less money than they do Sprint. But that's what came out of the investigation that we did in New York. And so, while the New York settlement, which just happened, basically did not go as far as we wanted it to, we're going to basically create a model complaint and file in every state that we can get people to go out and help us, and file in every city, have every city file and say, how many lines are there in our city? How much money did you charge us for all these wires? Now, there is one other place known as dark fiber. For those of you who don't know, Verizon and AT&T and all these companies have been putting in fiber optic wires continually since the 1990s. It never stopped. In fact, 50% of all the fiber optic wires in the United States are all dark. Now, they're on the books somewhere. There are maps somewhere. But nobody's actually talking about this. And from my perspective, taking the dark fiber that was already paid for back and using it for what we want to use it for, which is really fast, really cheap, really good, and keep your hands off of my bits, I think is the next step. And also open to all competition. Anybody who wants to use the wires would be able to use it. which is what the Telecommunications Act basically said, but they started whittling it away year by year. So anyway, let me see if I have any more slides. No. Well, thank you very much. I like questions. People who want to, you know, play with us, let me know. I can't see a thing from here whether there are people with their hands raised, so.
Yeah, are you taking questions?
Yeah, pump the mic, I guess.
Okay.
I feel like I'm on the yeah. I didn't do it. The lights are a little bright.
So you referred a few times to promises that have been made that haven't been kept.
Yeah.
So, and about the, and you talked about the regulatory authorities who, it seems like you're implying they could have done something, so I'm just curious about the details of that. Like, did they not do anything because they not hold the utilities accountable because of regulatory capture only, or is it also because the structure doesn't really let them? Like, did the authorities only have a chance to say yes or no because there was a merger on the table or because a rate making was happening? Like, do they have an opportunity even structurally to go back now and say, hey, you did not do this?
Okay, so the statute of limitations would say you can't go back 20 years and look at this. The cross subsidies are current. The stuff I just brought up at the end, which are we can go after. And there's, you know, in New York, $3.7 billion was overcharged, as far as we can tell, to just local service. So can the states do anything? Yes. They have the power to. Can the FCC do anything? Yes, but the FCC is useless. The FCC has taken over. The chairman of the FCC is a former Verizon attorney. The attorney for Verizon on this document, you know, to get rid of the county rules was Brendan Carr. So my feeling has been, and we've been doing this for a very long time. In 97, the New Jersey ratepayer advocates stood up and said, you know, you guys didn't perform as you said you were going to. And so they were able to get some concessions for wiring the schools. In 2000, the fact that I can list how many times there have been challenges about this is embarrassing to the country. My feeling is most people, after 18 months, nobody remembers that there's even a law. And then I'll give my favorite one is in New Jersey. I was testifying, and I was telling them about the history of broadband, and not one of the commissioners knew the history while they were about to give them a franchise. So I think that the truth of the matter is it's holding them. First, they don't know. I guarantee you that most of these people don't know what happened in their state. Making them understand that is one. Two, all the cross subsidies, I believe, are not legal in some states. I don't believe you can go out and charge for, you know, the wireless build out or charge $1.8 billion in New York for corporate operations expense. Now, the state basically doesn't want to look at this stuff because it's opening a can of worms. And I'll tell you, Cuomo actually probably killed off, in New York, the governor, probably killed off the investigation of the wireless cross-subsidy because he put a 5G bill into the middle of the budget last year. So, Verizon, the head of Verizon in New York and New Jersey happens to have been his economic advisor. So what you're dealing with is, for everything you listed, there's probably something that happened in every state. But for the most part, nobody's ever really just sat down and said, okay, we're going to go after this. Oh, I will say. In 2012, we got two cities wired in Stowe Creek and Greenwich in New Jersey because on the books, it actually said that they were required by law to go out and get 100% of the state for fiber optics and didn't do it. So we actually were able to hold them accountable because the state made a mistake and actually issued a show cause order of why they hadn't done the work. This, of course, was rectified by Governor Christie coming in, putting in one of his staffers to the state commission, and creating a stipulation agreement that says, it's over, you're not going to ever do this again, and now wireless is a substitute for basic, you know, fiber. So can we make a change? In New York, this one current settlement is a start, but we're going to be taking these to court, especially the FCC, because we believe that the FCC's data is corrupted and so badly that we might be able to hold them accountable in every state. I mean, the FCC's rules that were corrupted are in every state. They're federal rules. So every phone company had to use them. We just don't have the books to prove this. Did I kind of answer?
Yeah, thanks.
For people who liked your talk, who else should they read or listen to on this topic? Is someone like Tim Wu, for example, who wrote a book called The Master Switch, a good guide, or basically where else can they start to learn more about this?
Tim's actually, I like this book, and I think each of the Susan Crawford, there's a whole bunch of people that have different points of view about this. Susan Crawford's another person that's been, wrote a book on this stuff and is becoming more radicalized. But the truth of the matter is the stories have not really been told. I've been doing this now for a very long time. And, you know, if you type in my name in Verizon, you'll find that I wrote 90% of the stories. And or somebody quoted the stories that I wrote. So I think that we have to change this. I think when we start, our play now is to do this model complaint and get hundreds of groups to file at the same time. We're going to be asking for how much money was collected, how many lines are there today, but I mean, and also the cross subsidy stuff. How much did the wireless company of the construction budgets go to them? And I think that nobody's asked these questions. And I think now, if we can get different groups around the country to file at the same time with our complaint, of which everybody will have input, I think this is a good start. We've been doing this for a very long time and realized taking legal actions is the only thing left to do. We don't think there's like a lot. For example, net neutrality is important, but at this point in time, the stuff that we're doing, if we separated the companies, it would fix net neutrality because you can choose your own ISP. You don't have to pick this one. You could say, you know, there were 331 ISPs in New York City in 2001 when I looked on this in the BoardWatch ISP directory. So that's a lot of ISPs. So I think bringing back competition, I think they'll show up, is an important step. And so I think it's up to us basically to go out and start telling the stories. You know, any help would be great. This is a great, you know, I want to thank the Internet Society for, you know, suggesting that I speak at this conference.
Hi. So I am actually suing the FCC right now for data related to people who were astroturfing the common system during the Restoring Internet Freedom proceeding last year that ended net neutrality. You had talked about astroturfing earlier. I was wondering if you can name some names of not only front groups, but groups that were funding the front groups.
Well, my favorite group is ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, which basically creates model legislation from the phone companies and puts it into, that gives it to politicians who then go out and do it. So there's, I divided up the world in a couple of different ways. There's politicians who are just paid off. Like in California, there's a bunch of people that got, you know, $500,000 or $1 million from AT&T. It's usually done as foundation grant money, which most people don't know. I can make, there's a list of about 50. So let's start off with MMTC, I think it is, in DC, that multi-cult, well, I can't remember the name of that one. I'd have to, there's too many. I'm getting confused. Sorry.
We had a slide.
I should have, there's, we actually started outing them all about 3 years ago, and they've all changed names. That's why I'm having trouble with the old ones. There was one group called Issue Dynamics in the history, which basically had 15 or 17 groups working out of its own offices. But in terms of the new groups, there's a whole bunch of them that I'd have to make a list and post it. But thanks. I should do that. Yeah. If you look at anybody who's who's against net neutrality, they're probably paid off. Or at least lots of them, though.
Hi. So my question was about like companies like Facebook and SpaceX are trying to push toward like satellite internet. Do you think that's an actual possibility to kind of shift the internet and the cable networks, or is that just going to be another carrot on the stick like 5G is currently?
I'd like to think it would going to work. I was around for Iridium, which was going to be the solution set for everybody's, you know, broadband. There was a thing called CAI Wireless in 95 when the company stopped pulling out of their wireless thing. They, oh, no, we're going to offer, you know, this other wireless. So I've seen this five or six times. And so history says if I had a bet on it, I would say it would be a good bet. But considering there's a lot more people out in space than there were before, you know, there's a chance. I don't see it happening so fast. You know, when AT&T bought DirecTV, I was going, oh, no, they're going to really shit up on all broadband. AT&T said it's going to do fiber at the FCC, and then it rolled out UVerse, which is a copper to the home service. and couldn't do the speeds. And then basically, it wants to shut off the copper because it wants to give you DirecTV. And the answer is they just want to keep the standards so low that they can, you know, give you two cans and string and say, well, we're offering broadband. I mean, it's gotten to the point where, I'll give you an example. The FCC has set the rural areas as being 10 down, 1 up for wireless, fixed wireless. Now imagine, that's why we have to shut off the copper, because DSL could give that speed, but that would give you unlimited versus we'd have to go out and charge you per gig here. I mean, the trade-offs are ridiculous. So I don't really, if I had to do a projection, I would say that the likelihood of satellites showing up and being ubiquitous and working, not big in the next couple of years, but you know, so.
I love what you're doing, and especially the call, the statement you said, there's enough money. Can you hear me?
No, we're out of time.
Oh, okay.
I can't see anybody, but it sounds great. My glasses. Oh, okay. Sorry. See what she's talking?
Time is up.
Oh. Can I get the last question first?
Oh. No.
I'm scared.
I see everybody.
Thank you.